watch and social contact behind the vision of the fan. The character of the FCC is that it is an advisory think tank. It has no competence in relation to implementation. So it's not an implementing body. Implementation is the responsibility of departments of government. So it's constituted by 24 part-time commissioners who are not really government officials. It's supported by a secretariat. I have a secretariat that supports the EPC, the department employees, but the commission is the autonomous independent body appointed on the basis of the commissioners appointed on the basis of the skills. And so the tenure of each MPC is 5 years. So this commission was appointed in 2015, at the end of 2015, that just went about halfway mark of their tenure. The way they appointed is as usual a call for nominations. So there's a call for nominations and members of the public can nominate anybody who has the right skill and expertise to be a member of the NPC. It's appointed by the president, so it's very, very established as a prerogative of the president. The first commission had a simple mandate: give us a plan, give us a vision, and they delivered on that. The second commission was asked to promote implementation of the plan, to promote and advance the implementation of the plan. A kind of a challenging mandate, given that the NPC is outside of government. Made up of people who are not inside government, but they needed to interface with the way government works, you know, the processes, the bureaucratic processes of government. They challenge to also interface with other role players in society. And typically, it will be engagements with organized business formations, various organized business formations. So, those are sort of the interactions with a view to influence those role players with regard to the plan and the respective roles that they have to be taking the plan forward. Formally, their mandate consists of six aspects. As I said, to promote and advance the implementation of the plan, to engage sectors of society on long-term development of the country, to undertake detailed planning in selected areas, to undertake research analysis to inform long-term planning, to facilitate stakeholder engagement, and to establish international partnerships on planning. The work based on their mandate is organized into three work streams aligned with the APEX priorities. And these are APEX priorities for those who know the National Development Plan, informed by the NDP. Number one, the need to grow and transform the economy. And in this slide, you'll see that there's reference to the different chapters of the that speak to all the things that have been identified as necessary interventions to grow the economy. Secondly, to build human capability, again, the reference to the relevant chapter, social protection, health, education. and then lastly, to the need for a capable state in terms of the implementation of the in reference to the chapters there. I thought it might be important just to recall first the to give a high level overview of how implementation has gone around with the NDP. So perhaps it's just important to start off with recalling what the NDP says. There are three overarching objectives, and if you like, the way I think about the NDP is in terms of these three things. Quite a comprehensive document. Poverty, reduce unemployment, and reduce inequality. Those are the three kind of overarching objectives of the NDP, and I'll reflect on how it performs against those. There are essentially six pillars to the NDP over and above the overarching objectives. Is the need to mobilize all South Africans, to engage citizens in the development of the country, expand the economy for inclusive growth, building the capabilities of South Africans, building a capable state, and fostering strong leadership across society. Now, just a quick overview. This is work, as I said, that's been done within government, the monitoring that the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation does, DCMP. But of course, some of these findings are also confirmed by independent bodies. Recently, we had the IMF report on assessing South Africa's performance. We had the World Bank, credit rating agency, and the sort of thing. That although we did make a dent on poverty in the period of 2006 to 2011, we managed to reduce poverty across extreme poverty. But we have regressed slightly. And we regressed for a number of factors. The leading factor is unemployment, the stagnating economy. Because we were able to make headway on the back of the redistributive policies of government, basic services provided to citizens, social protection, social grants. But the economy has not fully played a role in helping us reduce poverty. So the imperative to grow the economy, to reduce unemployment, is really the imperative to address poverty. The data here is also drawn from the work of StatsSA. So these numbers will also have been numbers provided by StatsSA in terms of the survey, different surveys they conduct on unemployment. And again, the trends are challenging. We're sitting now at 2%. The NDP's vision is that by 2030 we would have created 11 million jobs. And again, there was a period when the economy created jobs. We were able to, at the last count, create 2 million jobs. Thank you. we are characterized as one of the most conscious leaders. On that one, a few other indicators of importance in terms of possibilities of South African. We have made headway in the education sector to build a single integrated education system in the country, coming from apartheid. And there are areas of improvement that we observe in terms of international monitoring tools, schools and such. Our schools are slightly improving, but we all agree that we not really should be in the area of major challenges. Really, education is critical in all of the tools that the NDP proposes. It's going to be an equalizer. The level of
HIV. We have currently now 4 million people living with HIV on lifelong antiretroviral therapy. Housing units, about 300,000 in the period of 2014 to 2016, which is 45% of the target that was set in terms of the medium term strategic framework. Which ends in the next year. We're talking about social protection, 17 million people, and children who are receiving early childhood development assistance. Electrification, we're doing pretty well. We are sitting at 84% of the 2019 target of 1.25 million connections. And of course, we're also doing non-green connections, refuse removal, sanitation, reliable water services. Those are indications there. Modest progress, not at the level at which we should be, given the targets that we set for ourselves from 2014 to 2019. We have 11 years, just under 12 years, remaining to 2030, the challenges are mammoth. We will need a radical shift in terms of how we do things as a country. We need to fix the way government works to make sure that implementation is effective. And then we have to bring in closely other role players. Particularly the private sector that has a critical role to play. The economy is majority owned by the private sector, and that's where the engine, I mean, for driving the NDP lies. So we have to really bring the private sector on board. These are all plans that of the new president to work, bring the private sector closely, commit them to specific things. There are a number of projects underway right now, which the MTC is also supporting, the job summit that's under preparation right now, the investment summit, and the stimulus package that is under construction within the government. Arising from that monitoring, a few important lessons. The fact that we are doing too many things you know, in government. There are too many priorities. Each priority is according to equal status. Resources are thinly spread. Sometimes there's no capacity to do the things that we have set ourselves. We could do better with enhancing levels of accountability within government. Government still fails to coordinate effectively at the national level. National departments, silos are still prevalent. We don't coordinate effectively across the spheres of government. Those are some of the things we picked up. Now I want to come to what the work of the NPC has been about. And essentially, there are three critical areas as a think tank, an advisory body. Research is critical, so there's quite a number of research projects underway. There are also position papers that the NPC has produced, is producing, working on. And then, of course, there are fields of engagement. And I'll try to link each of these things to the mandate of the plan, or the NPC. In regard to promoting and advancing implementation, there's a project that's underway, it's concluded of identifying a limited set of priorities. Again, it's informed by the plan, but limited. Currently, I spoke about government monitoring too many things, too many priorities. The targets that are within the medium-term strategic framework currently are in the region of 2,000, with over 1,000 indicators. Very difficult to have a dashboard of that based on so many targets, so many indicators that tells you effectively whether you're making progress. So just to help improve how implementation is done and the NPC's standards work, we hope that in the next round of planning, because we are now at the end of the current cycle, on the brink of a new planning cycle, we hope to feed in that work. Working with government departments, and of course the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation that set out these frameworks for planning in government. There's work around assessing the extent of the extent to which the national budget supports the NPC, so the NDP priorities on an ongoing basis, annually now for the last 3 years. The NPC makes inputs in terms of aligning the national budget with the NDP priorities, because we're not going to implement the plan if we don't allocate the required resources to the things that are required. In terms of sector planning, there are several pieces of work on energy, which is complete, in fact. Is undergoing further consultations with stakeholders. Water, also very advanced, and recently there's work on transport infrastructure. And the idea is really to take further where the NDP is general, to take further some of the ideas to identify gaps in terms of what the NDP was able to say by the time it could conclude it. And not necessarily to duplicate either, you know, what was previously done or work that's been done in government. So the idea is to target areas that are not receiving attention. One such area is on townships and rural economies, enterprises, the challenges of enterprises in the townships and rural economies. There's another project on transition into a low carbon economy, that was the big area in the NDP, chapter 5 of the NDP. We are signatories to climate change compacts globally, and so we need to ensure that we keep focus on this important area that's critical for the future. There's a piece of work on the economy that's under development, and there's also a certain interaction with government on what the thinking is around what we need to do to address this stagnating economy and unemployment. A critical area also is social protection. There's work on the cost of living, as well as the cost of doing business, which are challenges. The cost of living for the poor has emerged quite sharply as an area of concern on the back of increases in petrol prices, which are passed on to consumers. This is an area that the NPC is looking at, because usually the poor, bear the brunt of some of these challenges. The government has decided to undertake a 25-year review. In 2019, South Africa will be 25 years into our democracy. Government is doing a review. Honorable members will be aware that there was a 10-year review that was done, a 15-year review, 20-year review. Now we're going to do a 25-year review. And the National Planning Commission has been asked to be part of the body process. That's work that we currently initiating within the NPC. Stakeholder engagement, as I said, in fact today some of the commissioners are engaging with organized business leadership on challenges of the country and how we can move forward. I've also referred to the inputs of the NPC in the preparation for the job summit. So this is a list. I've covered some of these things. I'm not going to spend time on them. But the rest of these slides, the detail of the work program of the NPC on the economy, on social protection, social development, as well as on governance issues. I'm not going to go through those. I'd like to deal with what some of the challenges that confront the NPC. They're not unique to the NPC. These are challenges for all of us, particularly the government. The fact that we're not making significant progress on the core NDP goals, which I've spoke to, and so some of the work that the NPC is doing seeks to help to dynamize how we implement the government, how we can stimulate the economy, and some of the answers, I think, to how we move forward will come from this 25-year review, which will inevitably, I think, need to lead to the NDP being reviewed and updated. Typically, these long-term plans are reviewed after every 5 years to adjust with the changing context, as it were. I've indicated that we really need to improve implementation and the work around prioritizing and measurement of implementation that the NPC has done is going to assist us in that regard. The part of the reason why the implementation in government is not as robust as it can be, because there is a challenge, which I know the Public Service Commission has been assessing, researching into, of instability in public administration, changes in heads of department, changes in in ministers, that creates a bit of instability, lack of continuity, and that type of thing, and I think undermines effective implementation of policies and plans. And I think that the NDP has confronted that challenge. The NPC is also looking into this area on the back of what the NDP proposes around this, in this area. The need to professionalize the public service, to look at the capacity, the skills set, and how we make the public service a career of choice, and attracting competent people to help us with implementing these plans. Some of which are very complex, complex and difficult things that we need to do to implement the plan and move the country forward. As I said, it's really government of all the parts, the partners, role players. It's really government that has attempted to integrate the NDP in government planning. Business, apart from support, no sense of how they, what their part of implementing the NDP is. The NDP calls for higher levels of investment that is going to come from the private sector. And that's what we need to achieve. How do we get higher levels of investment in the country? So these are methods of ongoing engagement by the NPC with different role players. I'm going to stop there, Chair. As I said, I have Commissioner Temba Dlamini with me, who can assist in terms of a perspective of the Commissioner. I'm just an employee of the Commission, so I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Machuna, for the presentation. Mr. Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members of the committee. I'm going to try to put some emphasis on key issues. One of them is the forward-looking approach in terms of dealing with some of the problems that have been highlighted in as far as planning is concerned throughout the entire government system. What we have realized that the planning in government is sort of like disjointed. That's number one. And number two is that the NDP, as we have seen the planning in the various government departments up to the municipality level, it's sort of like a second thought. That is our observation. So what we are trying to do is to adopt, in terms of the budget reprioritization process, an approach, and we are hoping that maybe by 2021, there will be some form of migration into this kind of approach. The approach that we're looking at is to say that we have sustainable development goals, that's number one. And then we have the national development plan. And then you have your programmatic structure and the budgeting. So the budgeting process that is currently in place is not necessarily performance-based. That is our observation. And you are looking for a new shift to say that, and there are samples of where this has worked. Mexico is just one good example. Even within the continent, you have planning that is more integrated, where the sustainable development goals are becoming your baseline in terms of planning. And once you have completed that work, maybe let me also indicate that part of our role is to advise the president and cabinet. So we'll make whatever progress we have made in terms of the work that we have done were first and foremost presented through a plenary process, and then subsequently asked the chairperson to present it to the president and subsequently to cabinet. So that is the approach that we are taking as an advisory think tank. So I wanted to just emphasize the issue of the budget reprioritization. So that one is a very key aspect that we think if we move in that direction, I think we'll be able to now start looking at how we are managing wastage within the system. Other issues that Mr. Matona has raised, the energy mix is one of the deliverables of the NDP. And in the energy mix, I can comfortably say that there has been consultation throughout the country. What we have observed in terms of our consultation, one constituency or group that was not really pleasant whenever we were going around was the Labour Federation, and they are a key stakeholder in this particular process. So we are going to find a way of having bilaterals with the labor movement so that we can have their input in terms of how they look at the energy mix as proposed within the NDP. So that's the first part on the energy mix. The other one that I think we are almost 85 to 90% complete in terms of a final document before it goes out into the public domain for comment is the water and sanitation integrated plan. And you are looking at plans post 2030, not your 5-year plan. You're looking at a longer period. So the policy document that will come out in as far as water and sanitation is concerned is along those lines. The other one is on the rural and township economy. Also, that's a deliverable that has been achieved, but we have picked up a number of challenges. Challenges in terms of the role of the state entities that are supportive of your township economy and the like. The actual buy-in from those particular stakeholders. And also the lack of understanding of what the NDP is trying to achieve. There is a sense that the NDP seems to be a government product, whereas the NDP is a country product. We are trying to garner everyone to look at the NDP from that perspective. So those are some of the few samples that I can indicate that we are making a bit of traction. Maybe I must also highlight that within the streams, you have work that has started, for example, in transport. We are looking at a transport plan, again, 2030 and beyond, that will be able to assist the country in terms of dealing with the high cost of transport that is actually a burden to the poor. And we have had some engagement with the National Department of Transport, so that is work in progress. The other work that we also have embarked on is crime and corruption. So that's some work that we have started. We just started it some time ago. So we can't say we have reached 50% because it's still a work in progress. So I thought maybe I should just highlight some of the key issues that the Commission has done. On the economy paper, it's still in draft format. It has not yet gone to the public, into the public domain. We are trying to fine-tune the paper so that every stakeholder, including this particular committee, will have to make an input at some stage or another, so that when we are trying to address those triple challenges, which is unemployment, inequality, and poverty, at least we should look at what are the interventions that we have come up with, and whether these interventions will really make us realize our intended objective. And lastly, let me touch on the 25-year review. The input that we intend to make as a commission is instead of taking a 5-year, a snapshot, we are saying let's take a 25-year review and look at, for each and every 5-year period where a review has been undertaken, what was agreed upon in terms of the intervention, and why did those interventions not address the proper challenges I've already highlighted. And we're hoping in the review we'll come up with an analysis that demonstrates that certain things need to be dropped if there is a need, but we also need to, in the exercise or in the evaluation, highlight why there is a need to drop this intervention because it did not work. And of course, we will use international benchmarking work to assist us in terms of making an input into that process. Let me just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
That's the presentation from the National Planning Commission members. Let me welcome the Deputy Minister, Dr. Marshall, Honorable Van der Waald, and Honorable Tobasan. Members can comment, clarity, second questions. Honorable Tom Bella, Honorable Kosa, Honorable Mta.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate the reports. I want to several questions here, Commissioner. Commissioner Dlamini, if I might start with you. What I want to find out is how does the Commission do its planning when there seem to be no collaboration between the government department and yourself, because you said the mandate is to advise the president and the cabinet, but in the same breath you're speaking about the disjunction between the government department and yourselves. How then does the commission itself do its own planning? Do planning outside or without the departments? How does it happen? You also made mention of non-participation by labor, and labor conducts a lot of support from the ordinary people in the streets and families. What could have been the reasons for non-participation of labor, and what exactly is the commission doing to address that? Because labor plays a very critical role in the reach out processes to make sure that the NDP is acceptable out there, it's known, it's well known by ordinary people on the street. And then I'd also like to know, Chairperson, that since the NDP is an agreed formula to addressing the woes of the country by all and sundry in government, has ever been people who were held accountable for not having done certain tasks? I'm talking about consequence management in this particular regard, whether the person is an individual or department. Has there ever been a situation where people have been called to order one way or the other? And the projections, in as far as unemployment come 2030, is such that by that time, we shall at least have created around 11 million jobs. But so far, what has been the achievement, and what is the possibility of at least making it 50% I would like to know that. And then, chairperson, lastly, on crime, corruption and justice, what is the level of convictions and seeing justice served in high profile cases of corruption so far? Yeah, I'll pause there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tom. Honorable Kwesi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks, colleagues, for the presentation. Mr. Matuna, with regard the three aspects of priorities of government, as you've mentioned them, what are the challenges in respect of each one of them? You stressed much on unemployment, which also have a serious impact on the cost of living. Then what are the strategies in place to ensure that we deal with unemployment so as to reduce the cost of living? You also touched in passing the issue of instability in the public service. Do you want to maybe assist this committee with regard the stability? What are the issues? What are the real causes of instability so that we'll be able to know and maybe we'll be able to be coming with a way to dealing with the instability in the public field? The last issue I wanted to talk to it's with regard to the NDP. What is it that you are doing to ensure that the NDP on implementation, all stakeholders are not left behind? You have said yourself that some social partners should be brought on board. Then what method are you employing to ensure that this is done? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tau. Thanks, Honorable Kofi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Colleagues, the NDP, I think, is probably the only document that has come through this Parliament and was supported by everyone in Parliament. Because I think all of us in the Parliament at the time knew that this is a do-or-die situation. It's a pity Minister Dlamini Zuma is not here, because I would have liked to address something directly to her. One of the biggest risks that we're confronting with the NDP is simply this: that good document may soon lose credibility, and we can't afford that as a country. I agree with everything that Mr. Matuna has said, except one thing which I'll come to, and what Commissioner Dlamini said. If there is one thing that we need to do to bring back the credibility of the NDP, is a job question. All of the things that we have mentioned here, indeed, they need to be done. And all of them have their root in unemployment, which leads to poverty. And the biggest weakness we have with the NDP and the Commission is that the Commission has no power, absolutely no power. And this is the message that I needed to convey to the Minister. Those of us who have been in planning and in all sorts of things will know something. If you plan it and you let somebody do it, most of the time it doesn't happen. The Planning Commission has some of the best minds in getting this thing done, but they are not, as we've just said, and we know that. They are outside government. They advise. They think. That's the biggest weakness of the Commission. It's a think tank, it's an advisory body, it has no power. We can give the president the best advice in the world. If the president doesn't crack to it, because it's really the plan of the commission and they have to be seen to be doing, to be there to have it done. But in terms of the structure, the way it is, that can't happen. So we need to look at that. It's a very, very important thing. And as I said, if we don't get the unemployment target right, we're dead in the water. We already see the symptoms here. We already see the outcomes here. And just in passing, Mr. Madonna, I know modesty is a very good quality, but I would like to tell you here, you are not just an employee of the commission. You are an employee of the commission. Because some people will hear you say that and behave like that. You are an employee of the commission and your inputs have got to be taken in. And finally, Chair, as I said, this is something that is very, very, very close to my heart and the heart of many people in this country. We have to make sure, absolutely sure, that this plan remains the plan of the people of this country. The commission has got to find a way of being part of this whole implementation thing, because that plan has to work. If it doesn't work, we're in deep, deep trouble. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tom. Honourable, the vote, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you so much. I'm still trying to figure out how the NPC, the commission, does their work. Now, you said that there are 24 members in the team, and when you go to the NDP from Chapter 3 to Chapter 15, it says, you know, for each one, for example, position itself in Africa, economic infrastructure, economic and employment, etc., etc. So you have those chapters. The 24 members, how do they work out that the work goes to every department, that section that should be their responsibility, the departments? We hear the departments aren't really working with the NPC, or they don't understand the NDP. Now I'm trying to figure out how the work of the NPC feeds into those departments, maybe via DPME. DPME is the Department for Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So this plan is our plan. The NDP is our plan. So that needs to feed into the departments. Some departments, when they present before Parliament, they start with the heading, the NDP says this, this, and this. But now, if we look at this, it's not really happening. So how does it actually feed in? I expect it to feed in via DPME. That's the expectation. But why is this not working as it should? Then I'm a bit concerned when I hear the commissioner saying that we are looking at beyond 2030. I want you to look at now, between now and 2030. We need to put measures in place that will work even after 2030. Now we hear, right now, you're supposed to focus on implementation of from 2013 onwards, but you also keep saying implementation is a problem, it's not effective, and I'm expecting, you know, the implementation, the how do we implement towards 2030 so that all these issues can be resolved for 2030 onwards. Then I also want to know each chapter, all the chapters in the NDP, is there a year-by-year strategy what will be done so that we know the departments are effective and implementing what the NDP requires of them? Is there a year-by-year strategy? I would expect to get a presentation from DPME for every chapter to say that this is done every year, instead of waiting for the 5-year review and then the 25-year review and then after 2030. You know, I don't see anything. I'm still trying to separate all of these issues and trying to get an understanding of how it works. And the reason why I'm saying that is because you keep saying, and we keep hearing, that departments are still working in silos. By now, the departments are not supposed to be working in silos. If the DPME is there and they take the information from the commission and feed it to the department, so why are we still working in silos? And I'm worried that in 2030 we're still going to say departments are working in silos. So that's my concern. Another question that I have: the percentage for reduction of poverty, reducing unemployment, there's no major improvement. Now, the question is the population growth. Maybe, I'm not sure, I don't have the statistics, but maybe from 2010, when the NDP was first, you know, started, is the population growth considered in your figures? In terms of the unemployment rates, etc., or the reducing poverty and unemployment. And then I'm also worried the public don't know about the NDP. There's no awareness and information towards the public. Every time the National AIDS Council or SASSA, you know, there's always pamphlets and booklets that they spread to create awareness to the constituency offices, etc. But there's nothing on the NDP, and I'm just wondering, maybe you should consider an abbreviated version of what the NPC does and what the NDP entails. We don't hear about the NDP, you know, like 10 years ago when we started this document even. And my last question, I'm not sure if the DPME will be here when the second presentation is done, so I'm going to ask the question now. The National Development Plan 2030 says people with disabilities as equal citizens. Now, this document is compiled by the Department of Social Development, SASSA, the UN, and the National Development Agency. In that, they explain that people with disabilities in every sector mentioned in the NDP, they mentioned people with disabilities. Now, the commissioner, the current commission, do they know about this document? The commissioners, do they feed this document relating to disability into the NDP? My concern is that maybe in the NDP, the actual NDP, disability is mentioned maybe once or twice. Now, this document I have here is a very good document, so how can this feed into that? So that's why I'm asking now. I don't want to hear after 2030 that we're starting discussing disability issues there. We need to do it now. If you don't know this document, I urge you to please, as a commission, be made aware of this, and I'm not sure if you are. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, members. Just one or two comments. Commissioner, it's 8 years since the NDP has been adopted, if I'm not mistaken, as I see here in the timeline. But it's adopted 2010, and we're left with 11 years. Do you think we will ever meet all these targets? Because instead of the percentages going down, poverty, inequality, unemployment, It's like they are going up. And I mean, the concern raised by the colleagues. And the cost of living is so high. It does not only affect the poorest of the poor. Now even the middle class is seriously affected. The price of petrol, I heard Minister Khatev, I don't know whether they're misquoting him, saying they don't have control over the price of petrol. Once government makes such a statement, people lose confidence in that government. The minister just saying that we don't have control. I mean, you don't have control when you can talk to oil-producing countries, and you must be sophisticated when you respond. So why are you in government if you don't have control over the economy? So it means the market is running the country. That's what you're saying. So the petrol price, I'm telling you, out there, ordinary people feel it. That which is coming, people are complaining. It's like 1%, but 1% of 1,000 is a lot of money. 1% of 20,000 is a lot of money. Those who have got bonds, who have got this and that. So it does not only affect very poor people. It affects the middle class also. The rent performance is creating a problem. I mean, economically things are going the other way around. The NDP shows this direction. I don't know. In the past, we're told the rent is rising this way because of the politics. That's what people were saying.
It's quite true.
But hasn't the landscape changed? But the rent is still doing its own thing. You will not understand this unless, say, for instance, you have got a child in another country and you pay dollar denominated. If you have a child attending a school somewhere else, you don't pay in rent terms, you pay in dollar terms. Then what was 20,000 last month when you were paying a school fees is no longer 20,000, it's lots of money. So, you see, when you just look at these figures, like you are in a symposium, academy, you just think of figures. But if you sit down and do the calculations of life, you realize that the impact. I was reading a Sunday paper, I can't remember the City Press. There was a story about a couple in the Eastern Cape who in the main rely on social grants. And they were demonstrating how the money that they earn now can no longer suffice for them to buy groceries, pay for electricity, school fees, and this and that. There is a problem in the country, commissioner and colleagues. And we can't behave as if we don't feel this thing. I was in a funeral on Sunday at the village in Malamre. And the program director, because I was there, he just made it blunt and said, Honorable Member Masongai, we've got a problem with the petrol price. And I can't ignore him and say, there isn't much that I can do. I've been elected to be here. So, without talking all the semantics of NDP, let's start with the basics. Because we were dealing with unemployment, poverty, inequality. Now it's petrol, it's VAT, it's the rent. And people are beginning to lose confidence and uncertain about the future. So we don't know whether you will have to wait for 25-year review or you can do a 5-year and say, but how far are we? And then you do your 25-year with the government term. But surely simple issues that affect people must be attended. Because all these rises, VAT and petrol, they are not commensurate with the increase in the salaries and wages. So, and as you said, Mr. Matuna, all this, the brand is borne by the consumer. I know I was working in the transport sector, what it means if a petrol or a diesel price increase. It means the transportation of goods is going to increase. And what happens? The markup will have to go to the consumer. So let's deal with the basics and think of somebody poor out there who can hardly now afford the transport to come to work. Because if petrol goes up, taxi, train, bus fares go up, but their wages has not increased. So even affordability to go to work is a problem, because many ordinary people stay far away from work. I do a lot of work in Gauteng. In the morning I see people traveling from Kwandevele, Hammanskraal and Vila Vila going to Pretoria. And I ask myself, one day these people will not afford to go to work. Because those bus companies, they will have to increase their fares to cover up for their expenditure in diesel and components and this and that. So let's deal with the real situation and how this NDP is supposed to change the lives of the people. But the lives of people now are affected by all these factors. So let's deal with those things. Respond to the questions and comments raised by members so that we can go to the next presentation. Thanks. Before that, Commissioner, Deputy Minister Dr. Majak.
Thank you, Chairperson. And maybe you'll actually expect me to probably be making inputs, but this is not my department. So can I ask questions? To say, or maybe make comments, to say that what you need to actually also look at is the fact that the country is faced with the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And annually we have plans that are supposed to deal with poverty, unemployment, and inequality. No matter the kind of plans we have, no matter the amount of money we put, because this is supposed to happen across the board. No matter the kind of programs, you find that the problem persists. But when you look at our targets, you find that they have been achieved. And when you assess performance, you find that it's high. So something does not connect, and it's something that could be, what could be the homework for the office to actually start looking at that. And also the fact that there is also apparent population explosion in South Africa, to the extent that it's beginning to start frustrating systems. You look at education, you look at health, you look at police in terms of ability to deal with crime. The numbers are too many. If you look at the police criminal ratio, it's something that is not actually possible. So it seems that the Planning Commission needs to actually help government to look at, so that we start to begin to have a strategy of dealing with it. Honorable Chairperson is talking about the price of petrol, but also what would be of concern would be the fact that when petrol goes up, prices go up. When petrol goes down, the prices don't go down. And it's something that we need to look at as a country as to how we then manage to deal with it, because the high cost of living in the cost of living in South Africa is very high. If you just look at the property market and the prices of the houses in South Africa, you realize that we're soon going to be in a country where even houses are not accessible to just ordinary South Africans. How do we manage to actually control these prices? I'm not sure about the pricing policy, Chairperson. Maybe something that needs to be looked at closely so that we manage to move in a way that is balanced. Otherwise, this is something that actually creates a recipe of this big gap between the heads and the have-nots, because of the fact that it will be only a few that will survive the kind of system that gets created by what is actually happening in South Africa. And if we're not careful about pricing, we'll keep on fighting with bringing down inflation. But the food basket, the price of the food basket will continue to go up. And based on such arguments that the petrol has gone up, but when the petrol goes down, the food basket price still remains the same. So it's another petrol increase, and when another petrol increase comes, then it goes up, and then it actually then affects the inflation rate of South Africa. And I'm sure you know all of that then actually affects the repo rate when people have got loans and the interest rates are very high. So somehow we need to create that balance. And I'm sure the answers would have to come from the MPC.
Thank you, Mr. Amina and Mr. Matuma.
Thank you, honorable members and chairperson. Let me start at the beginning of the question that was raised by the honorable member Ndombe. The question was around how do we do our work? Now, the answer to that question is the manner in which we do our work. We have the NDP, and it's got specific targets, and for each and every target we have assessed, like for example, we looked at the number of targets that was in the thick document. We then came with 54 revised priorities because there are too many to measure. So after we have identified that, we then do research. And after we have done the research, which has to be evidence-based, and has we have to do consultation with all the parties involved that are affected by those priorities. Once that has been endorsed by the next plenary, obviously it will be tabled to cabinet via the president. And the reason why I'm emphasizing that is that it then gives us an opportunity to say, what is it that we are measuring? The MTSF was not necessarily directly responding to the NDP. And as a result, we had to look at the priorities. So that is the intervention that we have come up with. But as I said, it's still awaiting specific processes in terms of approval. Now, there was also a question around what is the reason for the non-participation of labor. I made mention of the non-participation of labor in as far as the energy paper is concerned. However, if you, I didn't talk about the, because we have three streams. The energy mix falls within the economy stream. There is also a stream that looks at the quality of life. And in that regard, there has been some engagement at the NEDLAC level to look at issues around, the quality of life, your grant system, and so forth. So there has been extensive discussion at that level, and work has been done around it. But in terms of energy in particular, I think we had to regroup because we After we have assessed the dialogues, we then ask the question, what went wrong and what is it that we need to do in order to bring labor on board. So one of the approach that we have taken is to do or conduct bilaterals with with organized labor. So that is the intervention that we're exploring. We have just started with that particular process. And the energy paper, as I said, is not a final product yet, because we want to make sure that that particular constituency is brought on board. That is one, non-participation and what we are doing. And then the other one was around accountability. Look, as an advisory body, we advise the president in terms of who actually implements how you deal with consequence management. It rests with the respective, if it is at a departmental level, it will rest with that executive authority of that particular department. At some stage, I think in the previous administration, I must share with the committee that we looked at the delivery agreements that were endorsed. Members will recall there were delivery agreements that were endorsed. And then one of the proposals, which was one of the radical proposals we made, was to say, let's look at those delivery agreements and then match them against each and every department in terms of their performance. But we can only advise, and that's how far we can go, to say that there is a need to embark on some form of remedial action, right? But the how that remedial action will unfold will depend on the president and cabinet. So in terms of holding accountability, there is a way of holding each and every department accountable, but it is more on what one will call compliance. You have an APP, you have delivered on the APP, it ends there. But there is no instrument that says that if you have not delivered on the NDP, what are the remedial actions that must be taken? And there are a lot of examples where the NDP, you know, as far as human settlement is concerned, we are saying so many houses will be rolled out. But now, if we pick up that the number of houses in a particular year has not been rolled out because there are specific either issues at the provincial level, we can only advise as a think tank. But we can't say, well, take this particular remedial action and this particular remedial action against this person or that person. It is the president or the executive authority, because we give them information, and it's upon how they take that information and convert it into trying to address the issue of accountability. The issue around, there is an issue about investors' confidence, and that's the reality we are faced with, to say that investors are also having an impact in terms of how do you want to grow the economy. But they also rely on the confidence. And there's always been an argument from, that's why we're having this conversation with Business Leadership South Africa, but they are one of the stakeholders. We are also going to have a discussion with the Black Business Council in terms of business to look at how do we make sure that investors' confidence is uplifted, because it has an impact on the economy. So that is an intervention that we are actually exploring. And then, on the level of conviction, honorable member, here I don't want to commit myself. I'd rather make sure that I get the right statistics in terms of what has been the level of conviction. Our assessment is that the level of conviction is quite low, but I stand corrected. Mm-hmm. I rather provide a detailed report in terms of that, so that members have the right information at their disposal. So the issue around what are the key challenges in terms of addressing unemployment, I think that was yours. But the key challenges, again, in order to address unemployment, it rests with partly investors' confidence. OK? Okay, if you don't have investment and you have the local business holding money in the bank, so they don't invest in the economy. So if the discussion today is to say, how do business ensure that in order to grow the economy, you can't hold money in the banks because it's not generating any generate interest, but it's not adding value to the economy. And that's the conversation we are trying to we are having with business leadership today, to say that don't hold money, but reinvest it into the organization. Now, business reaction will be, well, we need some level of governance in the system. And those are the conversations that you're saying, well, let's talk about how we can deal with governance. And there's a specific focus area from one of the commissioners in as far as looking at governance within the state-owned enterprises. So there is a specific focus on it, and that is work in progress. In terms of instability in the public sector, this is something that we are all concerned with. I know TDC is supposed to respond to. But our concern is that as and when there is a change in the leadership in terms of the ministry, you then find that there is no relationship, and this is the reality. There's no there's a breakdown of relationship between the Director General and the minister. And we are saying, let's look at the tenure of the Director General. The data that we have looked at, which is raw data, shows that, what is it, the average term is about 3.5 years. Yeah, it's three. So we are saying that it can't be. I mean, we are saying, irrespective of whether you have a new minister or not, the public servants are there to assist with the implementation. And our argument is that rather look at a period where it is 10 years, but those are the issues that we are exploring together with our colleagues from the Department of Public Service and Administration. But it's a concern because you walk in, next thing you are dealing with a different Director General, and then you cannot have traction in terms of what we have agreed upon. And then the method of bringing other stakeholders, we have tried different avenues, but the NPC is also budget, it's got a constraint as far as the budget is concerned. So even if we would want to have a number of stakeholder engagement, we are also constrained by how much has been allocated to do our work, because to do our work, we ask experts to assist us in terms of research. And in addition, we also have to factor in the traveling that will go with, doing our work. So that's another constraint that we are facing. And then Honorable Matau talked about losing credibility. Well, that is our concern also as the NPC, to say that the NPC has been adopted by everyone around this room and the country. And how do we make sure that we don't lose credibility? It's continuous engagement with the public. Now, there was a question asked, and maybe I'll answer it in another way. We went out, in fact, throughout all the provinces, with the exception of Limpopo and Eastern Cape. We took the NDP to the different levels of schools, so that children can understand what the NDP is all about. Okay. We also made sure that within the categories of the schooling system, we look at the different grades. Right? We went further by even looking at persons with disabilities to have a sense of whether do they understand the NDP. And in a way, we had feedback from those sessions. We even called this program the NDP for Children. Okay. And at some stage, we will share with the committee what are the inputs that are coming from those groupings. especially with those that are coming from the those that are from the persons with disability. And then they indicated, even in just to share with the members, the frustration that they have in the public in terms of access to transport. I mean, a person who's a wheelchair user gets tossed around by a taxi driver because they are a wheelchair user. So, but we share those moments with them, and we'll be able to gather information on it, and we'll share it with the members. Unemployment, again, in the paper that we are currently trying to finalize, the economy paper, we are coming with interventions. And these interventions are interventions that are saying the old, well, the previous interventions that were employed were not necessarily effective. So let's test this one because there is evidence across the globe as to how you can address unemployment. But we are also affected by the global economy. So Turkey goes past, it affects the rent. So, and the NPC can only advise in as far as how can you remedy unemployment to a certain extent. And in this regard, we looked at the Expanded Public Works program, and Honorable Chairperson will recall that the first program that was launched on the Expanded Public Works was in Limpopo, where we were trying to deal with unemployment. That was the first program. And we are trying to say, how do we continue to sustain that particular program to deal with unemployment? So that is also a program that we are looking at. Well, then there was a question of how do we do our work? I think I've touched on it. Our work, we are not full-time. We look at almost 13 to 15 focus areas. And each and every commissioner is assigned to do work on it. For an example, in my case, one of the focus areas is on transport. The other focus area is on crime and corruption. So each and every commissioner has a role to play in as far as it's concerned. But specifically to persons with disability, we have a commissioner who is basically focusing in that area. So in as far as looking at how the NDP is affecting persons with disability and not take it as an afterthought to consider the persons with disability, this particular commissioner is responsible for that. Well, we still have to provide evidence as to how the NDP has made sure that we are addressing that particular concern. So in terms of each chapter, year in and year by year assessment, I think the 2020 priorities, I think Teresa can touch on it, to say that in a way, those priorities for a year, for each year, is an illustration that we are looking at addressing all the components of the chapter year in and year out, and measuring it. The 2030 was a long-term view to say that in 2030, this is the type of society we want to see in terms of the three challenges that we have already alluded to. Why are we still working in silos? Well, departments are governed by different legislation. They have their own legislation. And there is one, as commissioners, we try to make sure that we blend with the department in as far as the NDP is concerned. We do not want to be seen to be, infringing on the statutory mandate of each and every department. So that's one aspect that we don't want to find ourselves in. But what we do, obviously, is to look at the annual performance plan of each and every department. And then we marry it against the NDP. Okay? And that is where we were able to pick up the disjoint and alignment. Hence, we are saying, for us to succeed in terms of dealing with silos, one of the big ticket items for the NPC is to make sure that the alignment of budget with the NDP priorities, that process is taking place. And on that note, for example, we have to speak to the appropriate, people. So we are in the process of engaging the Minister of Finance to say that going forward, this is how we want to see the alignment of the budget against the NDP priorities. So that is something that we want to deal with. And then there was a question around population growth. Well, population growth, I think the Honorable Deputy Minister has indicated that, yes, if you have population growth outpacing economic growth, then unemployment and the three issues that are affecting, that we have highlighted in terms of inequality, unemployment and poverty, they will be affected. So we have started looking at, you know, specific indicators such as your mortality rate, your fertility rate and migration rate, so that there must be a balance, so that even if the population grows, it should not outpace the economic growth. But currently, if that is the case, or which is the case, you have a major challenge. So then we must look at how do we deal with the indicators affecting the demographics. And then, awareness of the NDP. As I said, we have actually for the children come up with an NDP for the children. But we do take the point that there is a need to do further consultation with the broader society. So the different dialogues that we're having with the different stakeholders, I think we'll expand on it. I have covered the issues around persons with disability. In as far as the research paper, I think I take note that we'll take it factor it into our work, because it's something that we can learn from. And then the chairperson was raising the issue of are we going to meet the targets? Well, it's a very difficult question unless we have resolved the alignment on some of the basic things that we have addressed. We can meet the target, but it requires all stakeholders to participate in this process. The NPC as an advisory think tank can only advise and participate in that particular stakeholder engagement to make sure that we achieve the target. So that one is quite important for us to achieve. This means that we must interact a lot with business, as I said, we have emphasized business. Government, we do interact with government. Foresight is one of the forums where we discuss the NDP and get traction in terms of the work that we are doing. At the government level, we have dealt with the issue of the National Spatial Development Framework, so we have COCTA involved and other related departments in as far as spatial planning is concerned. So there is an interaction with all the departments that are affected with the work that we do. Okay. But maybe as it has been observed, we need to improve on it. And then there's an issue around dealing with the basics. I think I take the comment from the chairperson that let's look at the new issues that are unfolding, like the increase in petrol, VAT, what else can you put in VAT to be exempted from paying VAT. But the report that has come out from the commission is already highlighting that you can't add any more into the basket. And maybe the NPC needs to engage with that report to say that, well, what are other mechanisms that we can put in place so that the poor do not feel the burden and come up with a strategy. So we'll take that into consideration. I think I have dealt with most of the questions, but unless Mr. Makuna wants to cover. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Wait a bit, Mr. Honorable Ntombe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to come in just before Dr. Madonna. Commissioner Dlamini mentioned the issue of the EPWP. I got the impression that the NDP regards the EPWP or the planning around the EPWP as one of the best strategies, or a very good thing. But as far as I know, the EPWP is just a temporary way of putting bread on the table. It's got nothing to do with the permanent jobs that the people are looking for. And would like to have plans on how do we create sustainable jobs, which is that's a concern from the ordinary person in the street. Now, to mention an EPWP, the way Bob Dlamini put it, it gave me that impression. Maybe we could explain it further. Uh,
Thank you, Chair. Let me clarify the example of the expanded public works program. The intention of the program was to create, first and foremost, employment opportunities. Number two, it was also to create an entrepreneur program for those who will participate in the expanded public program, so that there is no dependency on the state, for example. That was the intention. The manner in which it unfolded has also obviously has created the perception that it is just a temporary or a stopgap. Okay. But the Honorable Chairperson will remember, when we conceptualize the expanded public works, and at that time we were looking at how the expanded public works can work with the sector education and training authorities, okay, to make sure that there is sustainability in terms of employment, and there's also sustainability in terms of people moving into different aspects, different sectors as entrepreneurs. That was the initial approach in as far as the expanded public works program was concerned. So when I was saying we can learn lessons from the expanded public works to make sure that if we are going to design a program that deals with unemployment, especially for the youth, let's learn lessons from the expanded public works. I think that's the message I wanted to put across. Thank you.
Okay, no, thanks. I'm just going to fill in a few areas, but perhaps to start with the unemployment challenge. I have to agree with the chairperson that we need a deep sense of urgency in dealing with this issue. I'm not going to use the word crisis necessarily, because it tends to be alarmist, but the social and political ramifications of the unemployment challenge are such that we need to adopt a different approach, and I think that I'm not sure, I can't be sure certainly, but that is why the President has called for a job summit, which is under preparation right now, where we will look at all strategies, because there's no silver bullet, there's no single one thing that can be done to solve the problem. We're going to tackle it through a variety of initiatives, and it was also discussed at the Cabinet Lakhosa recently, that happened recently, you know, that we need a different approach, because the reality is that the majority of the opportunities for employment are going to arise from the economy. And so we have to look at the economy, that we have to look at what are the constraints and be sure that each of those constraints we have a response. So, for example, sometimes you hear the private sector say, no, we don't have the skills. Okay. Which skills are preventing employment? What can be done quickly? Because some of the skills, the youth can be given those skills already in employment. How do we make sure that the TVET system generates the types of skills that are required? So there is going to be a need for conversations, engagement between government and all the role players that are different. Because sometimes the interaction with the private sector is very transactional. So we need a deep and ongoing engagement where, because when we interact with the private sector, they can see that the situation that we're in is not sustainable. And so we're saying, rather than sitting back and hoping that these problems will solve themselves, let's work together. It's really about working together. So the public works in many countries, public works programs are a means of tackling unemployment. And we have to learn with our own program what has worked in it, what has not worked. But it's only a part, probably a small part, you know. Because in a situation where people have absolutely nothing, and there are many, 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 many people in that space who have absolutely nothing, finding any opportunity to engage them meaningfully. You know, so there's a community works program, community health workers, and so on. Those approached in a proper and integrated manner, in a strategic manner, those are helpful interventions that we must continue. Part of the problem is such as fragmentation and so on, good ideas, but the implementation is not so good. So the job summit will give us an opportunity to consider all the options to tackle this problem, which is a time bomb that is going to could explode, particularly because the problem affects young people. And as the minister said in her budget vote, our minister, Prime Zuma, said, no society can progress and prosper if it does not draw from the talents and the resources of especially the young people who are the majority in our country. Corruption, I did check now that to confirm the observation by Commissioner Samin, that the conviction rates are low. So, and that is for the 5 years, in response to Honorable Vilma's question, the medium-term strategic framework was an attempt by government to do exactly what you're talking about on a year-by-year basis. What are the things that we're going to do? And they're there. But that's too many things, I think, in my view. And there's a lesson to be learned there, because the way it was put together, the MTSF, allowed departments to say, okay, yeah, this is the new thing that an NDP requires, but actually we want to continue the things that people have been doing. So it's a combination of NDP-inspired, NDP-based initiative, but the ongoing business that departments have been carrying along from the past. And that, by the way, had a budget. Those things have a budget baseline. But we must get to a point now. And I think that the fiscal constraints will help us, because what the fiscal constraint and resources, extremely limited resources, is doing, it says live within what you have, and within what you have do the things that are going to take us forward. The next round of planning, the top-down and bottom-up must be configured differently. Too much top-down means, you know, all the pet projects and that type of thing. We must really now be focusing, and this is why this work around priorities that the NPC is going to help us with. We can't do all of the things that we were desired to do and do them all equally and do them now. You know, some things we can put back as the mass frequency so that in the immediate term the resources, the bulk of the resources must be devoted to things that will give us tackle poverty, create jobs, grow the economy, and deal with education, which is a major, major contributor to both alleviating poverty but growing the economy. So the integration of planning is going to be absolutely important. And might I say that we need to see more and more initiatives undertaken where more than one department is involved. Because there's a lot of work being done, but you know, each department does its own thing, and it's also that's behavior promoted by the APP, unintended. Because everybody says, I'm not going to look at my APP, because my APP says this. But we need to find where we can have joined up projects that are monitored. And the monitoring at the center has to also be strengthened. I know that the department is looking at how we configure the center, but it is really from the center where accountability, where consequences can be enforced. So every DG must have a performance contract that must be monitored. The performance contract of the system of performance contracts of ministers must be made to work. So we have the infrastructure and the frameworks are there. We must just make sure that they work differently. And I know that the president, these are matters that the president is looking at fixing the way we work in government. I think we are at a point now about the NDP when we should be reviewing it. Someone said, when you don't achieve, the first place you look at is not what you committed to, is what have you done. And if you've done what you needed to do, but you're still not achieving, then you can go and look at your targets and modify your targets. I think the ambition of the NDP must remain in place with our country's challenge quite deeply on a number of fronts. We can't lower our ambitions, but we must really make sure we up the action. And I agree with that the NDP is an asset. We cannot lose this asset that unifies us across different ideological, political persuasions. We must protect it, but we are going to protect it, as you say, only through much more vigorous, much more robust implementation as we approach the next round of planning. The next cycle of planning. I'm going to leave it there.
Thanks, Herman. Honorable.
Thanks so much, Honorable Chairperson. It's not a question. It's because the Commission has raised a very critical distinguishing panic for alignment between the MTSF and the NDP, which is a worry, a very big, big, big worry, that for 8 years we've been sitting and looking at the APPs and the street plans, but they're using the wrong instrument. Now, having said that, now that the problem has been identified, Chairperson, my request is, I'm assuming here, that it was an empirical, it was a scientific research method that was used to identify that problem, and based on that, there should be a some resolutions or some proposals as to what is the way forward towards the 54 priorities. Because you see, we're going for triple BRR. And so which means this committee, we have to get at that as to how far the NPC has gone with what they have identified through the research work, the coursework, the research work that was done based on that alignment, because it's a frightening thing. It's really, this is an instrument which we all believe it was effective, it was measurable, it was done scientifically, and today we hear that there is just no alignment. It's frightening. It's really, really frightening. Maybe all the corruption we see, the maladministration, it's because there is just no instrument that is in place, Mr. Chairman. So, Chair, I'm really requesting the committee, the Chair, we request the Commissioner, whatever time, I don't know, whatever time, but if we can get it before we sit for our BRR, and maybe the Commissioner itself advised the department as an advisor that, look, this has happened, this is what we are proposing, because they advise their job, and see what the department is doing from that part, from that point of view. I'm very worried about what they have just said.
Okay, that will be followed up, Honorable Duweza. Honorable Deputy Minister.
That cost of living, high cost of living thing, is it something you could talk to? In the work that you're doing, you actually managed to look at it. If you don't have the answer now, it's fine. But normally it's always best to look at economics of things, you know. In whatever we are doing, so that we are sure as to whether economically we can be in the position to afford all of these ideas that we have. And also, to a large extent, it's not just only about pricing policy, it's just about general finance policy. For example, when you go into government departments, there will be treasury regulations that links with finance policies that are supposed to be assisting government departments, and you've got supply chain management, and you've got what you would call the supplier database and things. I don't know whether you actually ever go to that level in terms of assessment, but rolling out also requires resources, and we have limited resources. How those resources are actually used at the end of the day would actually tell us as to whether we will be in the position as a country to thrive or to fail. Because whatever little resources are there, at the same time as a country, we need to have at the back of our mind that these are resources that are available for growth, development, and investment. I don't know whether that you do apply that approach, but I have actually asked just about cost of living, as to whether it's something that you really worry about as the National Planning Commission.
Let me take the honourable vote and in your response, I'll request Commissioner Dlamini, but you'll be short, otherwise we'll have a problem with the PSC presentation. At 1 o'clock, I should be in another meeting with Honorable Nivot. So, Honorable Nivot, you can make a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick. The Commission in 2015 to 2020, I'm wondering if they will consider preparing a report. A report about what has been achieved or what has been done so far and the challenges as you've presented today and proposals of how to solve them. And then I'm hoping maybe in 2020 or perhaps the new parliament could see such a report of, and then perhaps the incoming commissioners can follow that up or take that up. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Nivot. Commissioner
Yeah, just quickly. So every commission, when it gets done, writes a handover report of the things that it has done and work that perhaps it has not been able to complete that can then be taken over by the next the following commission. The work around cost of living is probably one of the early areas of focus that the commission looked at, almost as if the commission was anticipating what we're seeing now, that these price increases are making life difficult for people. So the lens around it is one of social protection, which means that you have to look at what are the mitigations. Economic adjustment is probably a long-term thing. So, for example, we have to look at how do we reduce our exposure to imports of fuel. You know, what options are there for us? Because the more you're dependent on importing fuel, the more you'll be vulnerable to the shifts that are happening. So we have to be looking at that as a long-term issue. But in the immediate, what can be done? Social protection is the area to look at. How does the state mitigate when people are suddenly thrown into poverty because of those shifts? So the comprehensive social protection, looking at all the tools that are there, UIF, social grants, children grants, and seeing whether they completely provide cover. What we find is that there are many people who fall in between. You know, they're not children, they're not retired and that type of thing, and they're exposed. So that is that work which, you know, we can come back perhaps and have a very, because it's topical, we can have very focused discussion around, so we can see what the research has been done. And that work has been done with the Department of Social Development. As I leave this matter, because I know it's been closed, some of the questions that honorable members have raised touch on the character of the commission as an advisory kind of independent think tank. When in other countries, other planning commissions in other countries, no budget is going to be allocated until the planning commission says, we are happy with this plan, it aligns with where we want to go, and then they give the green light for the budget to be allocated. That's how other planning commissions are configured. So we may need to think about if we are going to continue into the future, how do we make sure that these sort of defects are addressed. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and the Commission really welcomes the opportunity to engage on this work with the committee, and we hope that it won't be the last time, because there's so much ground and so many issues that have been raised that we can do much more detailed engagements with. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Mr. Matuna. I think we'll engage more in the future, like the issue of the fiscal policy raised by the Deputy Minister. I think it's the main responsibility of Treasury, and the monetary policy is Reserve Bank, if I'm not mistaken. So we might need, next time you come here, Treasury officials be here. We'll get them at the last meeting when you were not there. They raised issues of NDP in your absence. And today there's a fiscal policy matter being raised. Because to me, Commissioner, the issue is not about institutional framework of the Commission. I don't think anybody has a problem with the institution, how it's framed, and its capacity. But the issue is in the implementation.
and you are not the implementing agent. In the main, it is department, it's SOEs. So, as members have raised the matter that probably next time the minister is here, it's a bet, so that she's able to respond to political issues which members are concerned about. Because you have done your work, you have put the NDPs there, but as you raise the issues, the department and the SOEs are not aligned. They continue to do other things not aligned with the NDP. And we can't be complaining of budget every time when we want to fix the problem in South Africa. There are other problems of coordination, alignment, and not doing the right thing, which have to be addressed. Infrastructure budget is massive, but it's just all over. People are not doing the right things. You are right, when we started with the EPWP, you were there, I was there. But what's happening? So, let's get the minister, yourselves, and treasury to be here. And probably economic what department, because they have got another program, whether they call it Grow Path or what, they're doing other things. You see, that's the problem. That department does other things. And we're not sure whether it's MDP or there is a growth path. Or the growth path, I don't know. You work with them daily. We need these things to be coordinated, because at the end, there are so many people doing so many things. And it's Qatar official budget, and you don't bring budget together and say, this is what we want to do, and do it. So we'll have another round, this very critical issue. Tina here, we deal with these issues from what we come across daily. When we leave here tomorrow and Friday, we are going to meet constituencies. And we deal with constituencies which is unemployed and so on. And I was saying, now the middle class is also highly affected, because they service the bond, they service the car loan, they take kids to school, university. Remember, they don't qualify for NSFAS because of their income brackets. They earn 300, 400 and above. But after servicing their loan for the bond, the house and the kids, they can't send the child to the university. What must they do? There is no way. So we must deal with these issues. I was once an MEC of housing. We had a problem of, didn't have a problem with the lowest income, but they had a problem with admin officers and the like. They are there working in Polokwane, buy a small car, but they can't afford a bond. The banks reject their application, and they were staying in backyards. So what do you do? That's when the social housing concept and other concepts came in. So we can't have always stopgap measures when there are problems. We must deal with a long-term plan, and in between find a way of implementing. So thank you very much. Let's move to the PSC. Ms. Marais Martin and the DDG, can you present?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and thank you for the opportunity to present. I'm going to jump in immediately into the presentation, because I can see that we do have time constraints. Our presentation this morning addresses the issue of government inability from achieving the targets that have been set in terms of employment equity in relation to persons with disability and also women at the senior management level in the public service. I'm going to skip the introductory slide. But just by way of background information, we are aware that government has put in place the Employment Equity Act of 1998 to facilitate workplace transformation through the elimination of unfair discrimination and implementation of affirmative action and measures to enable equitable representation of employees from different race, gender, and differently abled groups in the workplace. Through this, all employers, including the public service, are required to implement the provisions of the Employment Equity Act to ensure the equitable representation of underrepresented groups in the workplace. In 1995, Cabinet set various employment equity targets relating to the representation of racial groups across all salary levels, persons with disabilities, and women at senior management service SMS level. At an aggregate level, since 2005, the target relating to race was met, although in some instances there may be over or under representation of the public service in terms of racial groups in some of the provinces. The concern, however, that we are focusing on today in relation to what we are presenting here is focusing on the persons with disability and representation of women, most specifically at SMS targets, which have not been achieved in the public service, though there are some departments that have achieved both targets. Just want to mention, Chairperson, Honourable Member, that we have in addition to the presentation, we have a little document that outlines the specifics per department in terms of what they have achieved or none achieved, not achieved in terms of the target. Coming back to the terms of reference for our study, in March 2017, the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, as well as Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, requested the Public Service Commission to conduct an assessment to establish the factors prohibiting government departments from achieving the 2% in relation to persons with disability and 50% of women at senior management service level in terms of the targets that have been set. What we then did to establish the objectives, therefore, was to establish which of these factors are impeding government departments from achieving the targets as was set. I may just also say that the study was on the back of a presentation that was made by DPSA, which then outlined at the time that government was not able to achieve these targets, and hence the request, can we begin to delve into the reasons why they are not actually achieving these targets. In conducting the assessment, the Public Service Commission has collected information from national and provincial departments through a survey instrument. We also had a brief meeting with representatives of the South African Disability Alliance in November 2017 to solicit input, and written input was solicited from Disabled People South Africa at the time. I must also upfront acknowledge that given the fact that we had both time constraints and resource constraints, the consultation that we could engage with at that point really needs to be extended because that consultation could not be exhausted. The data collected through the survey and engagement with organizations representing persons with disability then enabled the Public Service Commission to develop a fact sheet, which is what is the basis of our presentation here. I think what is also important, we'll probably say that again at the end of the presentation. For us, what is important is that in terms of the brief that we have been given by the Portfolio Committee, once we have put in front of the committee the factors and the reasons which government has provided for why they have not met the necessary targets, we then need to interrogate what needs to be done, how do we consider those reasons, do we believe that those reasons that are forwarded are valid, or to what extent do we believe that departments need to be assisted, but also other interventions that need to be made in this regard. the picture then as presented with regards to gender presentation, if we look at the table in front of us, I'm not going to go through all of the of all of the figures. I just want to point your attention then to the column. It's the third column from the left that deals with the female representation at national department level. And the picture that emerges is that in general it seems as if departments are meeting the 50% target, although of course at the national level, at the time when we did the snapshot, which is September last year, already we can see that national departments were not quite there. And then we have a breakdown from province to province, where most of the provinces were actually able to meet the 50% target, and with an aggregate of 64% in terms of the total gender representation. However, when we look at the last two columns, honorable members, we will see that because our study was focusing on SMS level, because we may have a situation where the, where a department meets the 50%, but we want that 50% to be spread throughout throughout the department, then we will find that the picture completely changes significantly so when we look at what is happening at an SMS level in terms of female representation. And there we can see the figures then for national departments at 42%, with certain provinces, Free State at 33%, KwaZulu-Natal at 42%, Limpopo at 37%, Northern Cape at 37%, and it then becomes clear that at this particular level, the 50% target is not being met. When we then look, we look at the picture, because the study was focusing on issues of gender and then, of course, representation of persons with disability. Our next slide then looks at the disability target and the achievements in relation to that. And again, we'll see that the picture that is emerging is really not a good picture. At the national level, I want to point your attention once again to the last two columns, a total number of persons with disability at 31st of March 2017, and then a total number of persons with disability at the time when we finalized our snapshot, which was on the 30th of September 2017. And then if we look at the achievements of targets, the operative word is non-achievement, because we will see that at a national level, the target that was achieved was 1.20%, and then if we go down, we'll see how Teng has managed to reach the 2% target at that point, and everyone else, all the other provinces are quite below the target, with a national average of 0.89% at September 2017. I think at that point, because we had the DPSA figures previously, we knew that departments are not meeting the target, but then the request was, can we find out what are their reasons for not meeting the target? The consultation process, as I've outlined, which we have followed, which consists both of consultations, physical consultation, but then also with the surveys that we have sent through to departments and the responses that we have received back. These are the reasons that were put forward by departments. There was an issue of physical access, office accommodation not conducive for persons with autism, and lack of ramps and ablution facilities for persons with physical disabilities still an issue. The provision of assistive devices, no budgets were set aside in departments for disability management, and therefore no provision for these assistive devices that persons with disability may need in order to be productive in the workplace. This results in persons with disability not being gainfully employed and capacitated through ongoing training. The recruitment and selection processes was another factor that prohibits persons with disability and departments also from meeting the target. Adverts are not drafted in Braille. Print media does not cover blind people, and government websites are not accessible to people who depend on voice to access electronic information. Then we also find that some adverts contain what we believe are discriminatory requirements, which may not necessarily be met by persons with disabilities. For example, if you request a driver's license, to what extent that becomes a standard requirement, instead of really looking at whether, in order to be able to perform that specific job, whether the person would need that. And even if the person doesn't have that, would the person still be able to do the job, provided the person is supported? Other factors that are problematic with departments in terms of their attitudes, perception and lack of training. We find that officials at senior level are still not mainstreaming disability into departmental plans, programs and budgets of government. There is a lack of understanding of the complex nature of disability areas to the extent that invisible disability needs, for example, autism and other mental and emotional disabilities, are often not recognized. They are not understood, neither provided for in the work environment. We also have a phenomenon where there's non-disclosure of disability by some existing employees, and our information from GEMS, for example, shows that in 2016-17, 44,273 officials on GEMS were on chronic medication for mental health issues, which then translates into 3.07%. The lack of disclosure in some instances therefore results in some employees with disabilities being unable to perform their duties effectively, therefore resulting in disciplinary processes which should not have happened and or dismissal, whereas disclosure could have resulted in the employer with the assistance of qualified occupational assessment therapists assessing the capacity of such affected employees to work in different jobs or occupational categories. Another factor cited by departments is that the skills pool for persons with disabilities is extremely limited. There's no targeted training interventions for unemployed or already employed persons with disability, which then results in employees in this category occupying lower level administration jobs, or finding out that they are being straitjacketed into specific categories of jobs rather than being empowered to do whatever it is that they believe themselves being able to do. We find that there's also competition with the public sector and between public and private sector in terms of salary packages, which makes it difficult for departments to attract and retain suitably qualified persons with disabilities. We found that even amongst departments, we'll find that in order for them to meet the target, from time to time, they will poach each other's persons with disabilities. And that's why in some departments, if you remember the slide I put up with what happens between March in the specific year and September of that same year, you may even find a shift, because the target is 2%, but it does mean that if one person with disability moves from one department to the other, it could have a significant impact on the percentage that is achieved or not achieved. Then we also find that there's a lack of partnerships with organizations representing persons with disabilities. There's no structured collaboration between the public service and organizations representing persons with disabilities. There's a narrow focus on numeric targets, which then results in a lack of holistic approaches to address all critical areas of reform to ensure the effective development and placement of persons with disabilities. There's also a lack of will to provide financial support to enable the sector to support government properly, given the viability and effectiveness of the sector, which is dependent on limited donor and private sector funding. I think, yeah, I would just like to mention, Honourable Chair, that when we had our meetings with persons representing the sector, they made it very clear to us that even for them to be able to attend our meeting in order to consult with them, that they found it extremely trying that they really do not have the funds to be able to participate in the structures that government may want them to participate in. And also they made it very clear that they need to be assisted even in the process of consultation. And I think if we are going to move forward in and really exhibit the will to address these matters, this is really one of those key things that need to be addressed. I think one of the organizations that came to the meeting at the time when we had the meeting, we were lucky that they were in Gauteng at that particular point in time and were then able to participate in our meeting. I will come back to some of the issues of the factors that impede government departments from reaching the 2% target, because I believe we have just begun to scratch the surface, honourable members. When we look at the plight of persons with disabilities, we've really just begun to scratch the surface, and there needs to be far more and more in-depth discussions on what needs to be done with regards to this particular area. Our work in this particular study did, of course, cover persons with disabilities as well as the issue of gender. I just want to go to that section of our report as well. The report covered both the reasons for failure to achieve the 50% target for women at senior management service level, and these were some of the factors that were put forward as to why departments by and large were not meeting the target at SMS level specifically. It was put forward that there is historic male domination in some professions and departments, and some of these were mentioned as engineering, which makes it difficult also to recruit and retain female employees. Young to middle-aged male employees are dominating currently middle management service and SMS level, and as a result, opportunities to recruit women become available mainly after resignations and other forms of attrition. Then there's also a problem in relation to compliance, both compliance and understanding of employment equity. Even though we find that departments may have their plans in place, sometimes we'll find that it's just for compliance sake, but we find that they do not comply with their own employment equity plans. There is a lack of understanding of the Employment Equity Act and its provisions by line managers, and there is an overemphasis once again on numeric targets, which then results in lack of structured support for female appointees in the workplace, especially at this particular level. In a not dissimilar way, there is also competition with the private sector, and strict regulatory frameworks in the public service governing salary structures hinder the attraction and retention of women in scarce skills areas. With regards to budget and restructuring in departments, we find that we have budget cuts and moratorium on the filling of posts in some departments, which also inhibit the filling of these posts. Restructuring of departments, which affects progress on equity, as departments then stop filling positions during restructuring. From the side of the commission, we then came forward with some recommendations, and we do want to emphasize, honorable members, that our recommendations in this report, again, it's just to find ways of opening up this discussion again, and finding ways of how to move this matter forward, how to keep it in the public domain, and how to report progress in some way or the other, because at the moment there seems to be very little, if any, progress. First of all, from the side of the commissions, we believe there's a need to deal with the identified challenges at a systemic level, and to shift focus from nominal representation to address the entrenched and institutionalized forms of exclusion. To achieve this, the following recommendations are made. A task team should be formed comprising of the Departments of Public Services Administration as the custodian of the HRM framework in the public service, the Department of Women, Labor, Social Development, and Organizations for Persons with Disability, to develop a framework that will formalize the utilization of organizations representing persons with disability. To have the task team then to look at ways to ensure that we are able to recruit and train and prepare persons with disability for the world of work. Once such framework is approved, all departments should then be compelled to use organizations for persons with disability in the recruitment process, as well as the training and broader empowerment of persons with disability in order to meet the equity targets, as well as to enhance their ability to compete for jobs in the public sector. One of the things that we were told, Honourable Chair and members, when we had the meeting with persons with disability, they were telling us government is very happy to use what they call recruitment agencies to do their recruitment generally, and they pay these recruitment agencies or institutions fees for assisting them in recruitment. And yet, when government wants to recruit persons with disability, they do not want to find a structured way of organizations representing persons with disability for these organizations to assist government to actually recruit suitable persons in the positions that are vacant. There were quite a number of debates we had at that level. One of the things we put forward is, for example, and I think I mentioned it when I had a one-on-one meeting with Honourable Newbold, but one of the things was when government engages, we do not want to see government in a position where they become paternalistic. If there is supposed to be consultation, the consultation must be guided by organizations representing persons with disability. We also have to be made very clear as to who is the voice, who is the face of persons of disability, persons with disability, so that government gets clearly guided as to who they should be interacting with at this level. As I've indicated, when government approaches, that is currently the practice which we were told that organizations representing persons with disability are really not happy about. The current approach is if there is a vacancy, then they would circulate the advert to organizations representing persons with disability, and they expect these organizations to respond and support them. Without any formal and structured relationship that is there. And then these organizations, some of them felt that they're not going to share their database with government because they have spent resources in order to set up these databases, and yet government just expects them to assist and be involved without acknowledging their assistance or involvement at this level of recruitment. The Department of Public Service and Administration, which is our second recommendation, should take a leading role in ensuring that all existing frameworks are reviewed for purposes of ensuring alignment and success in the institutionalization of succession planning, especially with respect to the representation of women and persons with disabilities. Training materials, specifically that of the NSG, the National School of Government, need to be much more accommodative. We were not aware that there are training materials specifically aimed or developed for the benefit of persons with disability. There is a concern that the induction and orientation program into the public service fails to accommodate persons with disability, especially those who rely on sign language and braille for reading and interaction. The quality of communication technology in the public service should be improved to allow for improved dissemination of information to persons with disability, as many government websites are not accessible to all differently abled persons. Compliance with prescripts is essential, especially the need to ensure that departments are guided by detailed and approved employment equity policies and plans, and to ensure that employment equity plans are not implemented in a rigid manner that will undermine service delivery. There is a need to ensure that affirmative action measures include all measures listed in Section 15 of the Employment Equity Act, excluding quotas, and take into consideration contextual factors that are outlined in Section 42 of the Act. Again, the issue of consequence management should be applied where departments are not complying with the set targets. At the moment, we can see that the majority of departments are not complying with the targets. The matter is not really elevated into the public domain, and we believe that the matter should be elevated much more strongly into the public domain. We are bringing the information to the portfolio committee. There is a suggestion that we may want to make to the portfolio committee, but the issue of consequence management, I think even from the previous presentation, it's something that we are grappling with. We can report that this is the situation. We can say there should be consequence management, but other than saying the targets are there, it is supposed to be considered when the performance of departments are considered, when the performance of heads of departments are considered, but it doesn't seem as if the non-achievement of these targets have any negative impact on how heads of departments or EAs are assessed in terms of the overall achievement of the department, almost as if the non-achievement of these targets are not such an important matter to be considered in the overall pronouncement on whether a department has or has not achieved what they should be achieving. We've also indicated that DPSA should consider institutionalizing early retirement packages in the public service for SMS employees between the ages of 55 and 60. This will assist in creating space for younger people of designated groups to be employed, and also for middle management employees, especially women, to have opportunities to ascend to the SMS level in departments that are male-dominated. Our additional recommendations specifically to the portfolio committee, I did indicate, Honourable Chair, previously in terms of the limited resources also of the Commission, but at the same time how we can move the matter forward, how the Commission can further support whatever final decision the Portfolio Committee should take on this matter. Should consider convening a working session with key stakeholders to engage on the challenges as identified and the proposed solutions in respect of the 2% target for persons with disability specifically. We believe that the following stakeholders will be relevant to participate in such a session: South African Disability Alliance and Disabled People South Africa, Departments of Labour, Social Development and Public Service and Administration, because they all have a role to play when it comes to policy development, advocacy, implementation, and strategic support and engagement with organizations that represent persons with disabilities. I think there is acute realization from the Commission, and I'm sure at the level of the Portfolio Committee, that the Constitution obliges non-discrimination in terms of Section 9, Clause 3, non-discrimination on the basis of race and gender and ability. And it is our responsibility to move government to progressively make sure that they actually realize this ideal. There seems to be, to us, a lesser sense of importance that is attached to the non-achievement of these targets, and it is our belief then that there needs to be an elevation of these matters at a level that will really hold government account for not meeting targets which they themselves have set. I'm not sure, Honourable Chair and members, I think some of the issues that the portfolio committee may want to reflect on at this level also. Whilst we were doing the study, one of the things that we asked ourselves is how and where should this process be driven from? Would the portfolio committee want to task DPSA? Would the portfolio committee want to maybe say, okay, let's do this task team, but it's obvious that there is a need for this matter to be driven from someplace. In addition to that, how do we pressure government to emulate the examples of good practice which there are, which we do find pockets of good practice, not just within government, but even outside of government. When I had the interaction with Honorable Drugen, I was very, very impressed when she was explaining to me that here in this province there is a hotel which has been set up, which is run almost completely by persons with disability in a manner that is very, very successful. We have not been able, as the PSC, due to time and resource constraints, actually go and look at examples of good practice. But it seems sometimes as if we would need to highlight those examples of good practice and profile these matters so that others can learn from these examples of good practice. In our view, this report and our presentation here is step one. And as I've indicated, as a PSC, in as far as it is possible for us to continue to support this process, we would like to do that. But the challenge is really how do we make sure that issues of women and issues of persons with disability are mainstreamed into the manner in which we run government and in the manner in which we involve these target groups in a manner that is very productive and that enhances their capabilities and use the skills that they bring to the table. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. That is the presentation from PSC on the report. Let me take your hands for questions and comments. Honorable Khosa, who else wants to speak? Honorable Matao, Honorable Nivud.
Okay, those are the hands for now. Honorable Khosa.
Thank you very much, Chair President. Thanks, the presenter, for the presentation. Chair, I just maybe need to be clarified here as to what really is a challenge regarding the level of partnership with the organization representing people living with disabilities. Because to my knowledge is that the structure, you also spoke of forming a task team and even a framework to be approved. I don't know by who. What is this framework about? Who should approve that framework? Chairperson, if I may raise this issue concerning people with disabilities while on oversight, I met with the people with albinism. And they say they are able to do a lot of things, but they are being overlooked. They said, because for how long are we going to live on hand out while we can do something? You know, in my constituency, there are a lot of them, about 45 of them. Some are pensioners. They say we have never worked in our lifetime, but now we're pensioners. Some are youth. They passed the street. Some are they've gone over tertiary institution, but they are not working. Now if today we are to talk of starting things with regard checking, as if we do not know that they do have structure, that are representing them. It becomes a problem to me. I don't know if I go back, what I see, that I'm going to report back to them, because it seems that they're just new. They're just new. They are not known. If what to start, can I be classified as to what does it mean to start with new strategy? But with regard to SMS, I'm seated next to Umar Tuwazan, and I'm scared to talk about this thing, the SMS, because I think it's long overdue that they should be empowered. The 2% that we're talking about, it's an insult to the women. If I'm speaking this month, seated next to a woman, Jefferson, I'm very scared. Thank you very much.
Yeah, protest. Yeah, protest. But you are raising a key issue. Honorable Mdao.
Yeah, Honorable Kozia, I understand you. I just want to say thank you for the input. It's sobering. You can see we're all sober now. It's mind-boggling what happens. Yeah, with the way we treat women and the way we treat the people with disabilities, or actually mistreat them. But on a lighter note, one of the things that comes out over and over again in the discussion is that many of these levels are dominated by men. Maybe it's time the women make a vow that at the next election, whatever you're going to vote for women rather than men. Maybe these things will change. So it's something that you need to start thinking. If you start becoming scared of you, maybe they'll start doing the things you want me to do. Thank you, Chair.
Manubongwe. Yeah. You are very popular today. Honorable Nivot.
Thank you, Chair. You know, Chair, I'm very, very passionate about disability issues, and sometimes the passion really wants to fade. But I always say, you know, outside we will continue. I want to say thank you for the presentation, but I also want to highlight we have a lot of documents here. We have a lot of policies, good policies. We have it here, but something is not working. The recommendations and what we can do, we hear that over and over again. I took out a document from 2002 from the PSC, and the 2017 document, I compared it, and it's exactly the same issues. The issues are exactly the same. Inaccessible buildings, no ramps, no assistive devices, the same thing over again. I don't know if it's just staff that doesn't want to know, or if it's the political will that is not there. I don't buy that there's no political will. The political will is there, but I question the public servants and their will to do what we need them to do. I have in front of me the minutes from PMG, because Parliament minutes are not that detailed. But the minutes from the PSG was a meeting with the DPSA. That said, the monitoring of provisions for reasonable accommodation and assistive devices is institutionalized in the policy. On the provision of reasonable accommodation and assistive devices for employees with disabilities in the public sector. The directive was issued in 2015. And I would like to know from the DPSA and the PSC, this directive, how far are we with this? It's there. It's in minutes. We can't go back and tell people with disabilities, we're still trying, we're still considering, we still have fiscal constraints. the directive is there. You said transport to come to meetings, and the PSC also has limited budget to go to meetings. Now, you have the provincial commissioners. Can't you use them to meet with people with disabilities and have, you know, the questions ready for you? Is that not an avenue to explore? We cannot keep using the excuse of there's no accessible transport, they can't come, or we can't go to them. There are many, many ways that we can deal with this. I have a list of questions that I would like to put to you. Relating to the 2% appointment within government, how does the PSC and or the DPSA monitor the implementation of job access and reasonable accommodation, assistive device policy, that policy, from the perspective of the employees with disabilities? So if it's there, how do you monitor the implementation of that? If these policies are not adhered to, what is done if it's not adhered to? And how can people with disabilities use the policy, maybe advise on the policy requirements? An example of good practice in the public service and how those examples can be shared with departments. How can we use those examples? And is there any supervisor or HSCM manager or accounting officer, have they been charged with failing to meet the equity targets or failing to provide reasonable accommodation support? What are the expected loss in productivity with the failure to provide reasonable accommodation? And how many injuries on duty have been reported as a result of failure to provide the safe environment for people with disabilities? What is the percentage of applicants from within people with disabilities received for vacancies in the public service against the percentages of successful appointment of people with disabilities? I also want to say, you keep saying, you know, this survey shows there's no skills, disabled people have no skills. And I must say that many people with no disabilities have no skills, but they get the opportunities. Many of them have no university qualifications, but via learnerships, training, in-service training, they get the skills, but people with disabilities can't. Now, you mentioned that, and I did mention this to you about the hotel, and I invited you to come and visit, as well as all the honorable members. You're welcome to go visit the hotel. The people employed there, some of them have never worked in their life. They have no qualification in the hospitality industry, nothing. But Radisson Hotel Group approved that we could appoint 30 deaf people, or, well, basically 30 people with disabilities. That's 30%. 30%, not 2%. So when the hotel opened, we had 27% disabled people appointed. And they had 3 weeks providing training how to work in a hotel. They received 3 weeks of training. Some of them work better than the people who are not disabled. They even have a deaf engineer, no qualification, but he's a deaf engineer working under a qualified engineer. Now this, what is the issue that prevents the public service from appointing people with disabilities? I feel the survey, you know, it's excuses, autism, etc., etc., there's nothing done here. It's just a bunch of excuses. When you interview people, HR is responsible to meet with that person when he is he or she is hired and ask that person, what do you need to make your work effective here in this environment? Meet with the person. Don't go to SADA and the PSA. Ask the person who you are appointing. Maybe privately they will tell you what they need. I had one more. The person who sent me these questions asked, and they are asking, we are going, you know, 2019 is in a few months' time, but they're pleading with the new incoming MPs to get training, because this committee cannot keep inviting all departments and asking these kind of questions. Our MPs can, because they sit in various committees. Now, they're asking that the new incoming MPs receive training. There's a couple of documents, from exclusion to equality, realizing the rights of people with disabilities. That is a handbook for parliamentarians, as well as currently we have the white paper on the rights of people with disabilities. And I'm asking you, chairperson, so that this committee can make a recommendation to Parliament for the new incoming MPs to get training on these documents. We cannot sit here year after year with the same issues and the same questions that we're asking. You know, I realize 2% is nothing. We have vast amounts of people. We don't even have the numbers in this country. The disabled numbers, the disability numbers, we don't even have that in front of us, but there's many people and they have no work. The education system out there does not give them a quality matric that they need to get a job to get access to universities. But with training, they can do that. And we're listening to this. I think I've had enough of listening to all of these excuses now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nivot. Commissioner, just respond to all the questions, but try to be short to request the minister not to leave. That's an issue. But I also wanted her to listen to the issues raised as she's responsible for DPSA. And before we break, those who are rushing to another meeting, there's an issue of vacancies in the PSC that I want us to look at. I've got a correspondence here. So, Commissioner, you can respond.
Can I just comment before they respond?
Okay. Deputy Minister.
Thank you. To say that we welcome the report of the PSC. To say that indeed not much has been done to actually help transform this area of vulnerable groups. I'm sure we can do better. What is important is for us to strengthen our institutional mechanisms for transforming this area of work. Honorable Nivot has actually really went to town in terms of what is required for the area of disability. And at the same time, I think you need to just consider what she says in terms of participation of structures that relates to disability. And the report focuses on disability and women, but at the same time, we shouldn't forget children and youth, because I want those areas to be always taken into consideration at the same time. When it comes to women, there is proper institutional mechanism that has been set up for South Africa, which we need to follow. We need to strengthen. We need to capacitate, because already we know that there should be a national gender machinery that would actually involve civil society. It will involve the parliamentary committee, it will involve the Commission on Gender Equality, it will involve the gender focal points in government departments that are responsible for gender mainstreaming. So once we can be in the position to manage to resuscitate the gender machinery, because here what we are all agreeing in terms of issues of gender is that infusion of gender or bringing about gender transformation within government departments is lacking, because the gender machinery is almost dead. Your report doesn't even make reference to the Commission on Gender Equality, what they are doing, because if the gender machinery was still much alive, I'm sure it would actually tell you as to what the Commission on Gender Equality is actually doing, because it's their mandate to monitor gender transformation in South Africa. And you can't have a report that excludes what they are doing. They need to be brought into fold. And it's what we are going to be doing moving forward. And what is important also is to, because I do believe that the machinery is there, the mechanism of actually promoting gender transformation within government departments is there. You know, the other day I was actually looking at a report about the gender focal points, and just the names of those that are regarded as gender focal points almost like shocked me out of my skin, because you expect it to be a gender, it's called a gender focal point. But every department has got the name in national departments and in provincial departments. That tells you that issues of gender are not taken seriously. And this is why you have the 2% of SMS. Because as long as this matter is not looked at seriously, you find that there are some departments that have been established. It's like it's a department where everything is actually done today. And amongst all that is done, there is gender. Then there is a big problem. So what is important is to be sure that we can be in the position to establish the gender focal points across government, in national government departments, in the provincial government departments, going on to a local government department, if we are serious about gender transformation. If this is not going to happen, it means we, Chairperson, will still come back here in a year, in 2 years' time, and still tell you the same story that it's not happening because of the fact that we are actually not doing it properly. And also, once those departments get the right name, we need to also take into consideration that whoever heads that office, those desks, should actually participate in decision-making structures of the department. Because if they get the right name, but they don't even have a budget, they don't participate in decision-making structures, it still leads to the same problem. So those are the issues that we need to actually consciously go and work on. And at the same time, about accountability measures, when it comes to issues of performance of the director generals and whoever, we need to infuse issues of gender as part of their KPIs. If issues of gender are not part of their KPIs, how do you then assess a DG in the department that DG is actually taking issues of gender seriously? So there must be accountability measures that are put in place to ensure that gender transformation takes place. There must be non-compliance sanctions so that when it's not done, you know now these are the steps that are going to be taken to ensure that it does not get repeated by not being done anymore again. Then there's the issue of youth, which also needs attention. But what is good is that the President has actually just launched the Yes Initiative, which is an initiative that intends delivering about 10,000 jobs for youth, both in public and the private sector. And then there's a youth graduate recruitment program, which is actually about the youth that are graduates that are sitting at home, that has just been launched to create jobs for those young people that are at home and not having jobs and not having jobs. The President himself has actually reiterated the fact that it is now not important for an excuse of entry requirements to be put forward when youth is not employed in government departments. Because you know there are entry requirements that actually makes it difficult for youth to enter the market because they are told they, don't have experience. And I think the president has said remove the entry requirements that have become an obstacle, because if you look at the number of vacant positions within government, and you look at the fact that we've got so many youth that are looking for jobs and cannot be placed, the whole situation just doesn't make sense. And this is what we are lately, chairperson, going to be looking at, hoping that soon we will be in the position to deliver when it comes to this area of work. And of course, with the children, we need to resuscitate the national program of action for children deaths that were established in all government departments. For now, it looks like they are not operative anymore, when in actual fact, at some stage, every government department had a national program of action for children desk that actually puts a lens to deduce as to what extent the programs of that specific department impact on the lives of children. So even that needs some kind of attention. There's a lot of work that is supposed to be done, but at the same time, in terms of the institutional mechanisms that we've got as a country, because systems have been put in place. What is not happening is that when it comes to implementation, those systems are not working. So we need to actually have a way of aligning the systems that we've got. Like in the situation of women, it would be good if we had a report on something like this. Maybe somebody might say the Commission on Gender Equality is not delivering. They don't have a report. We have requested them to provide us with a report. They're saying they do not have information of this nature, so that it's actually known that they are not actually delivering on their mandate. And maybe sometimes it might be best when a report of this nature is given for them also to come in, so that we do it jointly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Commissioner, in 2 minutes, we're extremely under pressure, otherwise I will be left alone here.
Thank you.
Because we'll engage you also in the future. We'll invite you in the next meeting when we get the quarter report of DPSA.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, I want to respond in this way. I think based on what the Deputy Minister said, we will strengthen some of the recommendations, because I think we are saying the same thing. We were saying there should be sanctions for non-compliance, and this is what the PSC is also saying. I think the maybe starting also with the issue of the Commission on Gender Equity and our findings on the issue of women, the first thing is I will recommend to the Commission that we must hand over this part of this particular study to the Commission on Gender Equity. Remember, our brief was just find out what are the reasons why departments are not complying. That was at the request of the Portfolio Committee at the start of the study. So certainly I agree with you. There's no way that we can continue any work on this matter without talking today. I think we need to strengthen the recommendations, honourable members. But I also want to say, it may be unpopular, honourable chair, if I say this. When we make a presentation, when we say this is the status quo, and the committee or members are asking what needs to be done, then we may be making recommendations. The question then is, who needs to take these recommendations forward? Who are the people who are responsible for implementing the recommendations? And I think those are the questions that we, as well as the Portfolio Committee and other stakeholders, need to grapple with. One of the things that we would want to put to the organizations representing persons with disability, it was difficult for us to consult because there are differing opinions on how certain matters need to be dealt with. I'm not going to go into that. I'm just going to say that's an observation. When we come to the committee, we are asking, we are saying this is the situation. We're asking who needs to fix this? Who needs to put pressure on departments that sanctions need to be implemented against those HODs who are not meeting the targets? For whatever the reasons may be, we take cognizance of the reasons. We try and assist them with regards to the obstacles that there may be. But one of the things that we are saying is the as the Public Service Commission, we can bring the information. We cannot champion the cause. And someone needs to champion the cause. And we believe that part of championing that cause lies here within the oversight structures, but also it lies with organizations representing persons with disability to make much more noise. And we have to assist them. We have to support them. The resources is within government. The power is with the oversight structures to make sure that these things are happening. I just want to say to Honorable Niebel, I can so understand why she's saying she's tired of listening, because the same things are being said over and over again. Who are the people who must action on what is being said and what comes out of reports and recommendations? Our job is to bring the information, to make the recommendations, to support the process, but action needs to be taken elsewhere.
Thank you. What you are doing, you were appointed to do exactly that. You were not appointed to execute. That's why you're called the commission. So look at your mandate. We give you responsibility as parliament. You also pick up something up there, but the constitution says you report to parliament. And we hold executive accountable, those who are supposed to do what you have found out there. So don't go into the implementation. You will be getting into another terrain and you will be in trouble. You will come here running. Ministers are going to chase you. You belong here. You are established by us. You will see when there is an item coming. Let's do exactly that, colleagues. I think we should write letters to ministers. There's an action at the end of departments which did not respond. I think we should write letters to minister at the committee, parliament, and ask them why didn't they participate. Here, there's an annex somewhere. What is it? Annex A. Yeah. Department that participated and not participated. So I will write letters as the chairperson to ask the minister, why didn't your department participate in this? And they will have to give us responses. I don't think you need to form many task teams. You can't do that every time there is an issue. You want to create a task team. No. We can't be a government of task teams. Yes, ad hoc committee, interim committee. So there is a foresight with a DG in the presidency. Probably we should invite him in the next meeting when we meet the DPSA, so that he has to explain, and we give him a task to go back and convince the DGs. You see, this thing needs the DGs and the ministers, not task teams. So we'll invite him. We'll also invite you in the next meeting. And then make sure that there is progress. And also the issue of VSP, Deputy Minister, in the meeting where we are going to present the first quarter report, just brief us and the public. I was going through the social media last night. People are giving it different meanings. As much as the minister explained the issue of that there's nothing like 30,000 people retrenched, but the VSP, voluntary severance package, needs to be further clarified even to us here what it means. So that, and then there are 149,000 vacant posts in government. DPSA will have to explain to us on behalf of all the departments, because we can't call 35 ministers here. We work with them as their sole responsibility to coordinate all departments in this regard. And the
the same applies with accessibility, physical accessibility of buildings. Let me get the facts so that I write a letter to Minister of Public Works. So I don't just write a general letter, you won't understand. Amongst other issues is that there is a problem of accessibility of buildings. In your survey or the study that you conducted, let me get the facts. Where are the problems? So that I write a letter to him as Parliament. Minister, these are the problems that we came across when doing our work oversight. Come and explain to the community why are the buildings not accessible. That belongs to Public Works on behalf of all the departments. So a particular department does work on behalf of all departments because ministers account collectively and individually. So let's get all the facts and you give them to the secretary. And the same applies to the department that didn't participate. What were the reasons? So that I write letters to the ministers. We are done with that item. Before we close, honorable members, quickly, there is a letter that came from the chairperson of committees, honorable Frelick, House chairperson. It is in regard to the filling of vacancies. The table below provides a breakdown of vacancies arising. There are many other institutions, but ours, I think, is CG doesn't belong here, isn't it? It's PSC. I know which one. It's PSC. The others is PENFAL, IEC, CG, FFC, CRA, AXA. In regard to PSC, 7 months left for the filling of two vacancies, 9 months for one vacancy. For the Western Cape vacancy, correspondence sent to the President for consideration. And the next 7 months will be very active with the election work. And I think from the look of things, Parliament wants us to fill these positions or having interviewed by then before we arise, I think, next year. So this is a matter that we should look at when we advise as to how to go about filling these vacancies. Yeah. So thanks very much, Commissioner, and your support team, the Deputy Minister, honorable members, and everybody present here. Meeting is adjourned. Before we leave,
just one ask minute. Madam Chairperson, about clarification on ESP and 30,000 retrenchment. So is this what I understand?
And then we are going, when is the meeting? We have got the report. 1st week of September. Yeah, in the meeting, we have 1st week of September. Remember, DPSA is presenting the 1st quarter report.
So you want that to be addressed then?
It's just it to be cleared so that all of us are at the same wavelength to say this is the policy of government on VSPs. Of course, the 30,000 thing has been dismissed.
Okay.
We can't keep on
attending
to
yeah.
something dismissed. But the VSPs, like, and she has raised that in mm-hmm. the report here. Mm-hmm. as a way of giving space to youth and women. So if when you present that report, just to say there's this matter in the public domain, because we can't say it's not in the first quarter report, whereas it is in the public domain and people continue to say all sorts of things and we can't respond scientifically. We keep on saying, no, when we meet the minister. So we're saying we request that just to be clarified.
All right, it's okay, thanks. I'm just happy that you've been clarified on the 30,000 non-existent retrenchment of 30,000 public servants. But on the DSP issue, I think we will wait when is our opportunity to present so that we can further clarify on that. Mm-hmm.
Honorable Nkombe.
To my knowledge, the assurance has been communicated. It matters that we didn't know where this information comes from. We don't know who's the source of information that is inaccurate.
What I'm trying to find out through the chair is the manner in which it was communicated.
Yes, we have actually done press releases so that the public is aware, and I think even internally we have actually given information. Up to now, I think everybody that needs to hear what the department is saying about this matter has managed to get to understand that we are saying there's nothing of that nature, that there will be 30,000 public servants that will be laid off.
No, even last week, the deputy minister, in the presence of the unions, clarified that. But it's like in some quarters, some people are not convinced. I don't know. There must be something. There must be something. I think the department should do more, including politicking out there. Because I don't know. It doesn't die down. The minister at a press conference, but the unions keep on saying, we're leaving the alliance. So I don't know. Why do people insist on something that it has been dead? Even the presidency, I think, it has dismissed that. Mm-hmm. But somebody keeps on drumming it up. Mm-hmm. So I think it's politics. So as we say, in the next meeting, because this is the last meeting for this year, get another report. Okay, yeah. So let's get the issue out of the VSP. And thanks very much, honorable members. Let's watch it.
I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to